Welcome to Political Rewind. We have a full house today, and I have to tell you that this is one of those shows where, you know, we often have a really good time presenting the show to you. Our panelists enjoy talking politics. I love talking politics, and there's, goodness knows, there's always things to laugh about in politics. But I don't think today is going to be one of those days. We're dealing with, after yesterday afternoon, watching the president's news conference. Whether you're a supporter of his or not, I think there are people who have significant concerns about some of what they heard yesterday. So we're going to dig in to what President Trump had to say, how we, how the panel relates to that. We're going to play you some sound from Georgia Senator Johnny Isaacson, who yesterday gave the most eloquent remarks I personally have heard yet from any member of Congress about what happened in Charlottesville. And we are going to also share with you some clips from a remarkable Vice News documentary. They actually got inside the white supremacist movement. They had a reporter and a camera crew following one of the white supremacist leaders, and you're going to hear some of what happened with that. So we've got a packed show. Plus, we have state news to talk about. Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams really kind of folds right into this, because yesterday she called for the removal of the what do you call those, Greg Bluestein?
The Confederate relief.
Yeah, Bass relief. Bass relief. Thank you. Of the four Confederate leaders from Stone Mountain Park. That's been an issue, Greg, for a long time, but we've never heard it brought into a gubernatorial, a statewide campaign before, to the best of my knowledge.
No, not in this type of way.
Okay, that's Greg Bluestein. He's a political reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We're glad to have you here today, Greg. Columbus Mayor Teresa Tomlinson is back in the house, made the drive up from Columbus.
Yes, I did.
How long did it take you to make that drive?
Well, of course, going the lawful speed.
Of course, that's why I asked.
Almost 2 hours.
All right.
An hour and 45 minutes.
All right. Patricia Murphy, she is a columnist for the Daily Beast and Roll Call. You've heard her on the show before. Thank you for being here, Patricia.
Thank you.
And Patricia has a lot of experience working in Washington. And at some point during the show today, I want to talk a little bit about the Confederate statuary that's all over Washington, D.C. The federal government has a Confederate
issue. It's a generous supply.
Yeah, exactly. And Leo Smith, he is the former minority engagement director for the Georgia Republican Party. He's now out on his own as a Republican political consultant. And Leo, I think it's fair to say you are primarily hoping that you can work with campaigns to help them identify minorities who they might not otherwise be really paying the kind of attention you think they should to them, and bring them into their camps, yeah?
Correct. I mean, not only candidates, but also the ability to give current leaders new innovative ideas.
Okay. Let's start today. Within the last couple of hours, there was a memorial service for Heather Heyer, the 32-year-old woman who was killed in Charlottesville when the car driven by a guy who's now in custody, of course, and accused of second-degree murder, plowed into the crowd. And her mother, Susan Boss, who throughout the last couple days has really been remarkable in the way she's spoken out about her daughter's life and about the meaning of her death, she was one of the last speakers at the memorial. Let's listen to just a little bit of what Heather Heyer's mother, Susan Boss, said just a while ago.
You ask me, what can I do? So many caring people, pages of stuff I'm going through. I'm reading pages of pages, how she's touching the world. I want this to spread. I don't want this to die. This is just the beginning of Heather's legacy. This is not the end of Heather's legacy. You need to find in your heart that small spark of accountability. What is there that I can do to make the world a better place? What injustice do I see and want to turn away? I don't really want to get involved in that. I don't want to speak up. They'll be annoyed with me. My boss might think less of me. I don't care. You poke that finger at yourself like Heather would have done, and you make it happen. You take that extra step. You find a way to make a difference in the world, to remember in your heart If you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. And I want you to pay attention, find what's wrong, don't ignore it, don't look the other way. You make a point to look at it and say to yourself, what can I do to make a difference? And that's how you're gonna make my child's death worthwhile. I'd rather have my child, but by golly, if I gotta give her up, we're gonna make it count.
Every single one of us in this studio today is a parent. How do we all respond to what we heard? And certainly many, many of our listeners are as well. How do we all respond to what you heard from Susan Boss just a while ago?
Awesome. I am blown away by this mother, her lucid, just clear thinking, not only as a parent, but as somebody who says, I have a responsibility. Look, in a world of finger pointing, we have a monumental failure in Charlottesville. And that failure is that we don't individually take responsibility. And that, and for what America is, for how we act civilly with one another, for how we create an ecosystem of engagement, how we create a public intellectual space, that was a monumental failure.
My takeaway was when she said the phrase, if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention. The vast majority of Americans were outraged, period, mm-hmm. over what happened and the response to what happened. That's why you've seen CEOs from both sides of the aisle leave Trump's economic councils. That's why you've seen Republican leaders distance themselves from Trump's statements, and if not calling him out by name, at least criticizing the fact that he didn't go that he dithered for days and then, as we saw yesterday, reversed his entire stance. We hear the word outrage being thrown about so often, but this is an appropriate time, I think, to be outraged.
Let me just, before I get you, Teresa, and you, Patricia, and I called her Susan, but her name is Susan Bro, and I apologize for that.
I was just going to say, of course, her reference to if you're not outraged, you're not paying attention was her daughter's last tweet.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I love that she, in her own mourning, is casting a legacy for her daughter and a call to action for all of us. And she's absolutely correct. How many dinner parties have you been to when somebody says something outrageous or untrue? Is the victim of political propaganda of some sort, and it's just completely untrue. And you think, well, I'm a guest at Nancy's house. I'm going to let this roll. And I think that long really has been the day that has to stop. I don't think we have to be jerks about it, but I do think we have to say, I'm sorry, that is incorrect. That's not how this country works. That's not the process. Or I'm offended by that.
Patricia?
It reminded me, in some ways, of the response of the families after the Mother Emanuel Church shootings, when it was the families who were grieving who were the ones who showed us how to move forward when the leaders really didn't know what to do or say. In this case, I think President Trump just totally missed the mark in his response. So now it is up to the mother of the daughter who was killed to show us all how to move forward. It's just an incredible act of dignity and respect to her daughter's memory.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. This is going to come into play here. I've mentioned this on the show before. I got out of broadcasting for a while, thank goodness. And one of the things that I did was I spent 7 years as the Southern Director of the Anti-Defamation League. And in fact, one of the things we worked on was monitoring extremist hate groups. Both left-wing and right-wing, because there are left-wing hate groups, although white extremist groups are far more prevalent than people like the president seem to want to suggest. But one of the more interesting things, I think, was at what we used to try to talk to people about is this notion that Susan Bro really discussed. If you're confronted with somebody who makes a statement, mm-hmm. a friend, a neighbor, a coworker who tells a joke that's racist or anti-Semitic, the responsibility to step up and say, not angrily, not confrontationally, say, excuse me, I really don't want to hear you talk about Jewish people that way, yeah. Blacks that way. And that's really in some way, I mean, Susan Bro and Heather were in a bigger world. They were out there doing big social justice things. But Greg, they were also, as certainly Susan Bro today, talking about not playing it safe.
Yeah.
And going back to what the mayor said about the dinner party conversations and just being in someone's house and not feeling comfortable about stepping up, I can't even tell you how many times I've been on even just you know, groups from high school where people don't even say anything racist or anti-Semitic, but say something that is inaccurate, that now, as the journalist in that group, I'm always trying to say, like, well, hold on there for a second. Here's links. And then they'll send links back from, you know, disreputable media sources about why what I said is wrong. And it's you know, it goes against the human nature sometimes. You just don't want to fight. You're like, okay, I've got
You're a political leader and you're trying to run for office, you don't want to piss off an election body. You don't want a group of voters. You may not want to incite them or get them oppositional about you. And so this is a call for courage. Mm-hmm. And it's a call to let people know that when people who are in leadership positions don't act with courage, we create evil.
Well, this is a moment of potential seismic change. And we can grab it or we can lose it. And I think that we have to, even as it relates to the president, but as to anybody else in our personal realm, you stand alone if this is how you think. There is no quarter for you here. And it's amazing if you look at sociological studies that actually peer pressure is one of the most persuasive things. The need for food and water and, you know, and right up there is peer pressure, being accepted into the pack. And so I think we don't know what our own power is to convey to individuals, you've gone too far. And I will say one other thing that I've said publicly in another media opportunity, but was that if you're a family member, if you're a mother or father of somebody who's dealing with this, or a friend or associate of somebody who's dealing with this, you need to get them help, because there is a sociopathy about this.
So many people being bullied, being called out.
This is somebody who is the sort of things that the suspect James Fields had on his Facebook page. That is clearly, and I don't mean
James Field being the suspect.
Yeah, the suspect who was the driver of the car. And I'm not talking about a mental incompetency for criminality. I'm talking about a sociopath. That's a very different thing.
And did Dylan Ruth present some of these same kind of elements?
Yes.
We ignored them?
Yes. Patricia, I was yesterday at the news conference at Trump Tower. Most people have called it everything from unhinged to a meltdown. It was interesting to me that it was reminiscent of the only other freewheeling news conference the president has had, and that was that February event in which he talked on and on, fought with the media over and over again. I want to get your reaction, but I want to play one of the things. We're not going to play a lot of sound from the president, because by now most people have heard it. But I wanted to play a couple of things. And the one that really struck a lot of people was this notion of two sides to the story. Let's listen.
There were people in that rally, and I looked the night before. If you look, they were people protesting very quietly the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. I'm sure in that group there were some bad ones. The following day, it looked like they had some rough, bad people, neo-Nazis, white nationalists, whatever you want to call them. But you had a lot of people in that group that were there to innocently protest and very legally protest, because, you know, I don't know if you know, they had a permit. The other group didn't have a permit. So I only tell you this, there are two sides to a story.
Patricia, I'm not quite sure what the president is talking about when he says there were kind of innocent people. This was a weekend planned by white extremist groups to bring them all together so they could begin working in some coordination for the future. So I'm not sure who these innocent bystanders were he's speaking about.
Let's also pretend that there was an innocent bystander. I've actually heard some people interviewed who were a part of that group who said, oh, I didn't know this was going to happen.
Okay.
However, when you are in that group and you are marching with torches and you're chanting, the Jews will not replace us.
And neo-Nazi
there's nobody
flags.
Innocent left in that group. The door has closed.
I'm glad you brought that
Goodbye.
Up.
Goodbye.
Because here's some sound from the Friday night march that the president talked about being peaceful and non-threatening.
Jews will not replace us!
Jews will not replace us. That was just one of the chants.
I think the reason the presidential press conference was so jarring was that we all know, anybody from the South, anybody from America knows, there are, this opinion is held in narrow, dark corners of our society. To see the president defend this concept that there are two sides to this discussion of Jews will not replace us, that was a moment, I think, that was shocking to people, that this is, that typically we see a president call for unity, call for us to come together, and to offer no harbor for anti-Semitism and racism. And by saying there are two sides, that's the harbor that they were looking for.
Yes, and let me say, I've heard from well-placed, respectable people after this attempted moral equivalency. This is not a political debate. This is a humanity thing. Mm-hmm. And so to all of the listeners, all of our fellow citizens out there and Georgians, I just want to hopefully make this very clear. There are other groups. There's leftist groups and right-wing groups. The white nationals, the white supremacists, the neo-Confederates, these folks are not equivalent to some of the others that have been discussed, like Black Lives Matter. And go and look up their missions. Black Lives Matter says that it's a liberation effort to promote justice. And you know, they're strong about what they're about. But when you look up what a white nationalist is and what a neo-Nazi is, violence, expulsion of minorities, and violence against those minorities is their mission. They're invoking a race war. And so, no, there's no equivalency there. And yet, and let's go back to what Ms. Bro said. That's where we step up to these folks that we may know, may even be friends with, and say, no, sir, there's no equivalency here, and explain it to them, hopefully, to enlighten them. This is important.
It should have been the easiest decision Trump could have made all week. I mean, it's he had North Korea, he had trade war, he had all these, you know, pressing policy issues to deal with, and healthcare reform and all that. And yet, instead of condemning it and doing what any other president would have done, or any of the other candidates who ran for Republican or Democrat would have done in minutes, he dithered on it, reversed himself.
Greg, I'm not so sure that any other president would have done it. I've seen monumental failures by many presidents on issues of race. So I'm not leaning on the president as my idol for how to create peace in America. I never have. I don't think most Black American men can afford to lean on a president to determine our future and our safety. We know it doesn't work. And that is why I say what's more important is what we do. We the people, not we the president. It is important that we the people figure out that we have a responsibility for our collective commonwealth, and that it should not lie just with the president. Now, he missed an opportunity. There is no doubt about it. But will we miss an opportunity to change our communities, to do better? I believe that if I were in Charlottesville, that wouldn't have happened.
It is true that when President Obama spoke immediately after the murders of the five police officers in Dallas, there were critics who were disappointed that, of course, he gave sympathy. He said this is totally unacceptable. But he went on to make a comment about the violence about police repression of African Americans in the community. Maybe there's some similarity there, but at least he made a strong, unequivocal statement going in. Yes,
well,
right?
Let me just say, and I'm sorry to jump on Patricia, there's a difference between trying to bring everybody together by having an honest conversation and suggesting that you're justifying something like violence. I think that there is, perhaps it's a nuance to some, but to me, frankly, no. And the president does, once you're president of the United States, it does not become about your party or those that might be associated with your party. It becomes about we the people. So I'm sorry, Patricia.
Well, and I think President Obama was criticized at the time by a number of people, and we remember the criticism then too.
Right.
So
right.
It's not like he said that and people are like, oh, I agree.
Right.
You know, I think people were, we would like presidents to call out injustice, period.
How do you think the mayor of Charlottesville did in creating an ecosystem where the community assets were brought to bear to create the kind of a place where free speech could happen?
Well, let me say, you know, first of all, I don't like to criticize other mayors just as elected officials
should.
Don't like to. But I will say this. It's a very progressive community. And I think that they're probably going to find out as they look at this that they didn't have the resources necessary for this particular type of thing. And after what happened on Friday night, I'm not sure that it should have gone forward on Saturday. You are not required to move forward with any sort of protest or parade, certainly once there has been an act of this type of provocation. And you also can limit things that are brought into protests and parades.
So. I've got to get a break.
Sure,
in. No, I've just got to get a break in. As we go to break, I want to refer to something you talked about. Mm-hmm. You said if you go to the websites of these white supremacists,
yes,
you'll see a different kind of message in Black Lives Matter. The single most popular phrase among white supremacists, they call it 14 words. It is a mission statement, essentially, that was created by a member of a white supremacist group called The Order, a guy named David Lane, and here's what it is. We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. That's about as straightforward and clear as it gets, and those are the people who were in Charlottesville on Friday night and Saturday. Let's take a quick break and come back and continue this conversation.
Financial contributions from listeners like you are not the only gifts that keep GPB on the air. In fact, many listeners have already chosen to donate a used vehicle to GPB. We'll pick up your vehicle for free and send you the paperwork for your taxes. Get started today. Call 877-GPB-1-CAR or go to gpb.org/cars. That's 877-GPB-1-CAR or gpb.org/cars. And thanks.
Back on Political Rewind, Mayor Teresa Tomlinson of Columbus, we always call you by your first name, and we want to make it clear you've allowed us to do. It's not like we're being rude or anything.
Everybody calls me Teresa.
That's good. I don't think if Mayor Reed hasn't done this show, not because we don't want him here. We just haven't worked it out. I don't think he'd want us to call him Kasim if he were here somehow.
His Honor.
Leo Smith is with us, Patricia Murphy and Greg Bluestein. Let me play another sound. This is from the Vice News documentary, which, by the way, we're posting a link to it from Vice News on the blog today on our website at the Political Rewind website, gpb.org, gpbnews.org, and then go to the programs and find Political Rewind. You know, the documentary is chilling because we see it and hear it in a way that I'm not sure we were able to view it while it was unfolding. This is what happened. They were right at the street corner where the car intentionally crashed into a group of protesters. And they've really captured the chaos, fear of the moment.
They just literally came down the street at 80 miles per hour to fucking hit us just now. There are people, bodies laying on the ground right now. We told city council we did not want them here. They let them come. We told the police we did not want them here. They let them come. I seen bodies flying. I'm getting hit by that car. This is my town. We did not want the m***ers here.
Oh, my God. We got hit by a car.
So you were right there when it happened?
Yeah. I was on the opposite side of the intersection, and I saw people and signs and everything go flying up in the air. I saw the car go backwards up the street, so I know it was a hit and run. And I ran up because they were screaming, medic, medic, medic. There was a guy laying on the side, and there was a woman laying there, hardly breathing. And we ended up rolling her over, and she died. And I helped do CPR on her. So... yeah.
Greg Bluestein, that really brings you close to what was happening, that the things which the president yesterday just couldn't bring himself to condemn.
Yeah, if that doesn't send chills down your spine, I don't know what will. I hadn't heard that until just now, and you know, I think everyone in this room had an emotional reaction to that.
The president didn't bring himself to immediately condemn it. But he did eventually condemn it.
He condemned it, and then he uncondemned it.
Well, the next day.
It's been there's been an emotional detachment to it that's just inappropriate, given the horror of the circumstance. And I think I happen to have seen it live. when not the the hit of the car, certainly, but when the violence began to break out, and there was a good 20 to 30 minutes where there were no police visible at all, and people were being pummeled, to see people in militia gear, civilians in militia gear, using that menacingly towards others, so there's been an emotional detachment from the president, I think, that is very, very troubling. He's uninformed and appears unhinged in these responses. And I think it's been very unsettling for the nation in this incredibly trying time.
Well, here's what I think is odd. And Patricia, I'm going to get you in on this. I know you wanted to add something to it, but let me ask you this.
Go ahead,
and you
go
can
ahead.
Add to it.
Okay.
The president, in one respect, is not completely wrong. It is true that there were protesters there, people who came to confront the white supremacists, who themselves became violent. There were confrontations that were violent on both sides. So in that sense, he's right. But he doesn't seem to be able to see clearly past that and tries to make a moral equivalency between these protesters who were recoiling at the messaging from the white supremacists and decided they're both equally bad somehow.
Well, yeah, and I think also, though, I mean, this is a president who came to prominence in the political conversation attacking President Barack Obama's own nationality. So he comes into it with this history of kind of dubious statements about race and nationality and who is an American. And this is also a man who is not short on opinions. He feels very strongly about a lot of things. He feels very strongly about the CEO of Merck. He feels strongly about anybody who makes a personal slight against him. But he seems to not quite know where he stands on exactly what was happening in Charlottesville. And I think that is the problem here. We know he believes something strongly. When he was scripted and John Kelly put it in front of him, he said the right things on Monday. But then once he was able to really kind of start freewheeling and saying what was in his heart, that's when it kind of went off the rails. And I think also he is espousing opinions that none of us know anybody in our lives who share these opinions. And to hear the president say it is again, just very jarring. And I think he is finding out now that it's going to hurt him, not just kind of when people start to come off of his councils, but it's going to hurt him deeply when he needs to go to his fellow Republicans and start to get back to business. So,
Bill, if I could add, there is, First Amendment is broad, deep, and wide in this country, but it does have boundaries, and that is when you incite a riot.
Right.
And your freedom of speech ends at that point. And so when you show up with torches and you're yelling such things as blood and soil, and you're surrounding a church, if people come to the defense of the civilian peace, if you will, the civic order, if you will, if they come to the defense of that, I would say that no longer do the neo-Nazis, do the white supremacists have freedom of speech. They have incited a riot.
Yes. And I want to speak to something that Patricia said in that, I remember on this show, I took issue with Obama's not using radical Islamic fundamentalists. And I took issue on this show about that. And I think it's right to take issue with the president and his immediate response. But again, I also want to talk about the tactician on the street, the municipal leader, the mayor, the city council. They failed. We must do better. We must learn from it. We must not fail.
I want to add one thing to that. I think as we have all seen terrorist attacks around Europe and England and Paris, that it's very difficult to guard against a car driving into a group of people. I think there was a failure of imagination here. It has never crossed our minds, I don't believe, that a fellow American would do this to
a
crowd of
people.
Patricia,
I think that's our failure, that we don't realize how hurt people are.
Right. And while I think this has opened our eyes, unfortunately, it's opened our eyes, but it's also caused so much more pain because of the way that it's been handled.
Yes. Greg, you got something for us?
Yeah, a quick bit of breaking news. The mayor was just talking about how cities and local governments have the right to deny these things. Well, just now we have breaking news that the Stone Mountain Memorial Association, which owns state-owned Stone Mountain, has denied a KKK request to burn a cross at the park.
Yes.
citing the pro-white rally last year that they did allow to go forward. So we have an example of just minutes ago of our local government saying no way.
I told a reporter just yesterday upon inquiry, and I've instructed our city attorney and our chief of police, that we have a certain list of things you will not bring to any protest or any rally or any march, and we will enforce that. Now, if a federal judge wants to order us otherwise, we'll talk about it then. But I think all mayors, you're going to see them, those that are full-time, those are in charge of public safety in any event, declaring what will and will not occur in their cities.
Yes. Let's talk about this from a political point of view before we move on. Leo, we did have pretty much universal condemnation from the Republicans in the Georgia congressional delegation, Democrats too, excuse me, but Republicans really are the ones who unfortunately are in a position of having to deal with the Republican president, Donald Trump. But nobody wanted to call him out by name.
Yeah, I mean, I think, look, again, you know, I say that we should not make a false idol of the president. And so, therefore,
Wait. Forget about the president. Why can't members of the Republican congressional delegation call him out by name? Cory Gardner did in Colorado. Others have been doing. Marco Rubio did in Florida.
Right.
Our delegation seems unwilling to say Donald Trump did something
wrong. Well, you'd have to. I'm not going to point fingers at our delegation because I think more about my own personal responsibility. And I, Leo Smith, called him out by name. And I say that David Perdue, what did he say? He said, these groups are the antithesis of American patriotism. That's what David Perdue said.
Okay? But Patricia,
that's important to say.
Okay, you know, it was President Trump who said it in terms of, with regard to Islamic radicals, you've got to call something by its name if you want to be able to confront it. The Republicans in Georgia seem unwilling to confront President Trump directly. And by not, it's fine that they're arguing for peace and kumbaya moments. But if you're not willing to say to the president, Mr. President, we support you, but please, Donald Trump, think about your statements, your actions. We call on you to change up on this stuff.
There is no yes, but please with this president. And I think I'm not going to single out the Georgia delegation. They are not alone in their decision. Many Republicans, most Republicans have denounced this vociferously, but not denounced the president by name because there is no bridge back to Donald Trump. Once you cross him, you're not coming back. So when he was asked about John McCain yesterday, he said, oh, John McCain, who voted against great health care.
Yeah.
When you cross this president, there's no going back. He still remembers people who did not support him when the Access Hollywood tape came out. So if you come out against this president at any time, you'll pay for it. And now, how much will you pay for it? We don't know. They also have their own voters. These guys don't want to lose their elections either.
And they're
taking care of their hide.
And there's the point. So, you know, there is an imbalance. There's an erratic quality to this president that people have been talking a lot about and invoking some pretty serious terms. But the Republican leadership, the Republican members of the House and the Senate will not quote, cross him. And the reason why is because their agenda is very important. They need him to push the agenda. Well, let me just say something. There is no tax cut in the world worth this. Okay? And so you got to get your priorities right. Are you going to allow white nationalists to have some safe harbor somewhere, sometime in our community because you really, really want less regulation for your bank, less taxes for it. No,
yeah,
sir.
But I like the fact that the Republicans who have spoken, many of them have gotten to the root of the matter. We must get to the causation of this thing if we think it's really important to eradicate. And so when you talk about a young man standing there saying that I'm an American and he's carrying a Nazi swastika, and you find out that he's public school educated, then I would say that one of the things that's a priority is how are we educating people like that? How can we call a person like that educated? How can we have a mayor not prepare to use the assets of his community to create a peaceful protest and be able to make sure that that can take place?
Well,
we need to hold that mayor accountable. He's a Democrat. He's a progressive. So I want to hear the Democrats also condemn the mayor.
No, come on. They had called out the Virginia State Patrol, and because it, a lot of this is you're talking about a city of 40,000 people. They don't have that kind of gear. We do in Columbus.
1997.
We do in Columbus.
The Nazis and the KKKs marched in Blacksburg, Virginia, when I was on equal opportunity affirmative action staff at Virginia Tech. We did not have the same outcome. Same action, yeah, different outcome because of leadership.
Different environment.
It's about 3.5 hours away. But they called out, they called out the Virginia State Patrol. I'm sure they were deployed in a way they thought would be effective, and they got it wrong.
Well, see, I like how leftists get the benefit of the doubt, but a Republican president doesn't.
Chief of police is
a leftist.
We've heard that. We've from everybody weighing in. I want to do something else. Greg, so the president wasn't quite sure whether he needed to condemn the white supremacists at the rally or not. The character who Vice News follows around is a guy named Christopher Cantwell. He was actually a candidate for Congress at one point. He's a shock jock. He considers himself at times he's done stand-up comedy. But he's a pretty hateful character. He is a character with a lot of hatred in him. And so as the president refuses to be tough on him, here's what Cantwell tells Vice News.
I'm carrying a pistol. I go to the gym all the time. I'm trying to make myself more capable of violence. I'm here to spread ideas, talk, in the hopes that somebody more capable will come along and do that. Somebody like Donald Trump who does not give his daughter to a Jew.
So Donald Trump, but like more racist.
A lot more racist than Donald Trump. I don't think that you could feel about race the way I do and watch that Kushner bastard walk around with that beautiful girl, okay?
There you go, Greg.
I'm not really sure where he's trying to go with this.
You know where he's going. He's saying that Trump was remiss in allowing his daughter to marry a Jewish businessman.
So he's being serious.
And this is
here.
A guy who Trump. Oh yeah.
Okay. In other words, he's not Trump's friend.
Right. Well, in other words, he's a sociopath. He also said, and I quote, "The right is meeting your demand for violence." That's what he said. The right is meeting your demand for violence. This guy is unhinged and imbalanced, and he's a sociopath.
It's also in hopes to give the president the benefit of the doubt. How could a man whose children and grandchildren are Jewish tolerate this? Yeah. Does he understand who he's in bed with right now? I literally don't know the answer to that question. I think he's getting a lot of briefing books on it probably right about now.
Again, I think the president saw clashes. And it's all a reductionist idea to him.
Yes.
Well, there were bad guys on both sides who went after each other without thinking about the ideology that brought the white extremists to Charlottesville in the first place.
And there's a reason David Duke, Richard Spencer, other members of the alt-right or white supremacist groups are saying he's opened a void. That his wishy-washy responses and his reversals has just given them a vacuum.
Yeah.
Well, look, when I showed up at prom with a white date, you know, all the nice middle-class white parents who sat around and didn't do anything about the people laughing and pointing fingers, they're just as guilty.
Well, and I think there's a difference between bigots and white nationalists. They all need help, but some need to go to jail. And so, again, we've got a lot of work to do. To the extent there's bigots in our circle, we need to heed the call of Heather Heyer's mother and inject ourselves to show them a better way. Bigots and white nationalists are different.
I apologize. Sure. It seems like I have to ask you to stop for a second so I can get breaks in. It's not about you. It's about me. We do need to get a break in. This is a Political Rewind. When we come back, I want to actually play for you something that leaves us with some reason to believe there is hope in all of this. We'll get to that after a break.
On the next Fresh Air, Eric Lipton, a Pulitzer Prize-winning New York Times reporter who covers corporate agendas and government relations. He's been investigating the extent to which the regulated have become the regulators in the Trump administration. He writes about industry lobbyists who are now in senior positions at many government agencies working to roll back regulations they once fought. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 on GPB.
Welcome back, Greg Bluestein. Johnny Isaacson, of course, was in the studio with us on Monday, and we talked to him live about all of this. It was one of the things I asked him was, this was after the president had finally said, yes, there were KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, they're bad people. And I said to him, well, Senator, do you think those groups think of this as lip service, a wink and a nod? The president has already given him a break. Do they receive this as, oh, we know he's really on our side but has to do this? And he, you know, gave an interesting answer. He basically said the reality is the president has got to speak out against these groups regardless. And that was fine. Yesterday, we were in Macon, where the Georgia Chamber of Commerce had its annual congressional luncheon. It's always an event to really get a chance to talk to members of our delegation. And Johnny was the keynote speaker, Senator Isaacson. And I'm going to play for you. It's a little longer, but not terribly long. The comments he made, which his staff tells us were not scripted. It was not a speech. He got up and spoke from his heart. Here's Johnny Isaacson at the Georgia Chamber.
But I'm reminded of what Benjamin Franklin was asked when he walked out of the convention that wrote the Constitution of the United States of America, when a citizen of Philadelphia approached him and said, Mr. Franklin, what have you given us? And he said, a republic, if you can keep it. I've always remembered that because that's really true. We have a republic. It has worked well for us, but it is ours to keep or ours to lose. And there are times in our history where we're confronted with challenges that if we looked the other way, if we didn't accept the challenge, it could cause us, in effect, to lose that republic, for which there would be no replacement. America is a great country. And what happened in Charlottesville, Virginia, didn't just happen in Charlottesville, Virginia. It happened in America. You know, the great words of Martin Luther King in his letters from the Birmingham jail had some of the most direct quotes I've ever used in my speeches to make points that I could have never thought of myself. One of them was just on things like Charlottesville. When he said to the black ministers who were urging him to slow down, he wrote back and said, injustice in America anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Charlottesville is one of those examples. What happened in Charlottesville was in Virginia, but it might as well have happened here. Because if things like that start happening around our country, we begin to lose the greatest country on the face of this earth. 2008, Barack Obama was elected president of the United States. He became president of a country as an African American that had changed from what it was to what it became because we had a constitution and we had a heart that knew that freedom and liberty and peace were what all of us stood for and what all of us wanted, and knew the rights and the strength of every single individual, regardless of race, color, creed, or sex, or national origin, was equally important in the eyes of the Lord and in the eyes of liberty.
That's Senator Johnny Isaacson. Those are the sorts of things we need to hear people say right now.
Yeah, it's beautiful. You know, I think sometimes when we look at this void that our President Trump has left us, you know, he does have such an ignorance of history. We've seen that over and over again, whether it's North Korea or whatever. And I'm not sure he understands the gravity of what was said as Johnny Isaacson so skillfully and eloquently just wove for us why it matters. Our country was built on this foundation for a very specific purpose, and that was to prevent mobs of passion and hate. And so they made it a republic, and they made it a federation, and they gave us an anti-majoritarian branch, and they did all these things to make sure that we could not be inflamed by demagoguery and other, you know, passions in this way of us versus
right.
them.
So thank you for that. Let's move this one step down the road. One of the other things, we're not going to play it, but one of the other things that the president talked about yesterday was he said, well, you start with the statues of Confederates like Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson and others, and where does it end with George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, because they were slaveholders. True. They were, it seems to me, and we could spend an hour talking about it, that there's a certain false equivalency there as well. They were, after all, founders of the country, and they wrestled with their dilemma about slavery. And we have wrestled as a nation with the fact that our greatest founding fathers were slaveholders as well. But that does bring us, Patricia, I said I'd mention this, I talked about it briefly earlier. If we're going to start taking down Confederate statues, Statuary Hall in Washington, right next to the rotunda, it is the place in the Capitol where states are allowed to send a statue of two of their leaders over the, over historically have done this. And we got a lot of Confederate, that's your old stomping grounds. There are a lot of Confederate heroes up there in statuary
hall. Well, it also, you know, it reveals the idea of states' rights and self-determination. These are statues that the states have sent there and left there deliberately.
Yeah.
Now, there has been a call by the Congressional Black Caucus to remove those Confederate statues. There are 10 of them now out of 100. And they, it is kind of a living collection. You know, Sojourner Truth was added recently. And so I think that it will be a debate that may begin. But I think it's also important to know there is a way to have these debates that are respectful and that give understanding to both sides, not that you must be a racist if you want this particular statue or that particular statue. And I think the way that South Carolina handled taking down the Confederate flag, the way that New Orleans has handled taking down the statues of their of those Confederate generals because they had nothing to do with New Orleans. They really had more to do with the Confederacy. They were well debated. They were voted upon. They were in New Orleans legally litigated. And people felt like their voices were heard. And in Charlottesville, this was voted on by the city council. It's when you, it's just when these passions are inflamed. I do think the media has the media coverage has really blown it up to a national conversation. There's a way to approach this conversation and to understand what these monuments do to African Americans.
Well, all right, so we're about to have that conversation in an even bigger way here in Georgia because of a Democratic candidate for governor, Stacey Abrams, saying sandblast the Confederate leaders off of Stone Mountain. Well, what's this going to be? What we've already got enough. Race is already a volatile issue in the Democratic gubernatorial primary. How is this going to play into that?
Well, this is an old argument in Georgia, as you know, that this argument has been made by others, especially with the Black Caucus of Georgia, about getting rid of that. And there was a discussion about putting a Martin Luther King monument at the top of Stone Mountain as a way to sort of bring things back to the middle. Somewhere in the middle on this monuments issue, there is the answer. Okay, and part of that is slowly educating your community about Southern heritage, that white heritage is not necessarily this kind of heritage. They don't have to just embrace this. I think white people need to get a better grip of their heritage, and we need to talk about what it really is. And then we also need to tell other stories, like we're about to tell in Georgia on the 28th. We'll be unveiling the Martin Luther King statue at the at our General Assembly outside on our grounds. We need to tell other stories about America that we can all embrace. And then we can all celebrate our heritage together.
This was a really interesting and I think an epic week in the Democratic race for Georgia governor, in that you had what happened on Saturday at Netroots with Stacey Evans, who is white, being shouted down by protesters yelling, chanting, support black women, trust black women, repeatedly at her until she was drowned out. And then a few days later, having Stacey Abrams call for the removal of the Confederate leaders from Stone Mountain. It's an obvious and probably a smart tactic on the Democratic primary level to polarize the Democratic primary a little bit more.
Yep.
The biggest, African Americans make up the biggest part of the Democratic electorate, obviously. But this is one of those issues. You had all four leading Republican candidates, reject that move. And you had Stacey Evans make a very nuanced statement, essentially rejecting it as well. It's one of those issues that will not be forgotten next year around this time.
Right.
Well, you know, the LA Times did a beautiful article in 2015 after the murders in Charleston, and they actually went to Stone Mountain and began interviewing people and noted that the majority of people there were minorities, and they were there on pilgrimages to tackle Stone Mountain and stand on top of it and let freedom ring. So what was interesting after you read this is that Martin Luther King Jr. has co-opted Stone Mountain, Georgia. He has let freedom ring. And so there is something very empowering, clearly, to minorities, particularly young minorities, by tackling Stone Mountain, walking up and standing on the heads of three Confederate generals and letting your freedom ring. And so, you know, I just wonder, this is such an important discussion, and to the extent that there's offense and that that statues were put anywhere to demean and to offend citizens, then that needs to be looked at. And I think a lot of communities are doing that and doing it swiftly. And then there are others where I think we need to take it into a broader historical context and think, have we co-opted this to tell our full story? And will great-grandchildren understand? Even there was a moment when these historical figures were used as weapons, and then there were moments where we took control of the situation and rewrote our history.
Andy Young weighed in on this this morning. Among other things, he said, "I think it's too costly to refight the Civil War. We've paid too great a price in trying to bring people together. I personally feel that we made a mistake in fighting over the Confederate flag here in Georgia, or that was an answer to the problem of the death of 9 people to take down the Confederate flag in South Carolina." You know, though, we got very little time. I'm going to let you have this, Patricia. That's not unlike an Andy Young kind of statement. Always looking for a way to avoid the controversy and somehow bring us together without the controversy.
Well, the black legislators who serve in the South Carolina legislature and had to walk underneath that flag and pass that flag felt very strongly about it. And they played a part in that decision. And I think they led on that decision with Nikki Haley. So they got to make their own choices.
Greg Bluestein, oh, what a week.
Yeah, and I think next week we'll be just as trying. I hope it's not, but it's been a very tumultuous time this summer.
All right. Mayor Teresa Tomlinson, it's great that you come up to Columbus to join us. I'm glad we have you. You're now kind of on a regular schedule to be here.
Once a month.
I'm glad.
We'll looking forward to it. Thank you.
Leo Smith, we'll have you come back. We always like hearing your feisty opinions about life. And Patricia Murphy, thank you again for joining us today. All right. So we are going to close on what is in some ways a sad note. But on the other hand, we're going to do it by celebrating it. You know, today is the anniversary of the 40th anniversary of anybody?
Elvis.
The death of Elvis Presley.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Elvis died 40 years ago today in Memphis, and it just seemed to me after a really difficult week, we should hear a little from the king himself. So let's play him out as I say thank you to our engineer, Tyler Morris, to our associate producer, Olivia Rheingold, to our producer, senior producer, Jenny Ament. Thank you so much for all you've done to make the show work today. I'm Bill Nigut. We're back tomorrow with Two-Way Street at 2 o'clock. John T. Edge, the head of the Southern Foodways Alliance, talks about the modern history of Southern food, how it impacted the Civil Rights Movement and the years since then. It's really an interesting conversation. And then we're back Friday at 3 with another Political Rewind. Let's let Elvis take us out.